Well, good afternoon, listeners. This is the Jobs Program, the Australian Council for Defence of Government Schools. We're here every Saturday at 12 midday to defend and to promote public education. And we have a very full program this afternoon. We're going to start off with lots of facts and figures because we like facts and figures. And they're from Trevor Kobold from Save Our Schools. If you go to the Save Our Schools website, you'll see a great deal of very interesting facts and figures about how private schools are building up their resources at the expense of public schools because they're now getting more government money than public schools are. Now, we're going to hear from Andy on government funding supports huge resource advantage for South Australian private schools. But I'd like to have something to say about it afterwards too. Over to Andy.
Thanks, Jean. Government funding supports a huge resource advantage for South Australian private schools. Figures published earlier this year show that South Australian private schools have a major resource advantage over public schools. Since 2009, private schools have received large increases in government funding while funding for public schools has been cut. Public schools remain massively underfunded for the challenges they face, while independent and Catholic schools are overfunded. The favourable funding for private schools is a key factor behind the enrolment shift to these schools. Updated figures published by the Australian Curriculum Assessment and Reporting Authority, ACARA, show that the total income per student in South Australian public schools in 2024 was $21,161, compared to $26,194 per student in independent schools and $23,660 in Catholic schools. The total income per student in independent schools is 24% more than that of public schools and 12% higher in the case of Catholic schools. Government funding accounts for 76% of the income of South Australian Catholic schools and 58% of the income of independent schools. In 2024, Catholic schools received $17,971 per student from the Commonwealth and South Australian governments, and independent schools $15,284. Commonwealth and South Australian government funding for private schools adjusted for wage and price increases to reflect the real increase in human and material resources increased by much more than for public schools between 2009 and 2024. It increased by $4,265 per student in Catholic schools and by $3,773 per student in independent schools, compared to $2,221 per student in public schools. The percentage increase for Catholic and independent schools was three times that for public schools. Government funding per student for independent schools increased by 60.7% and by 57% in Catholic schools, compared to just 20.2% in public schools. Commonwealth government funding for Catholic schools increased by $3,429 per student and by $3,052 for independent schools, compared to only $1,148 for public schools. South Australian government funding for public schools increased by $1,073 per student, by $836 per Catholic student, and by $721 per student in independent schools. The increase in total income per student in private schools was double that of public schools. Total income per student in Catholic schools increased by $4,108 and by $4,297 in independent schools, compared to $2,038 in public schools. Private schools have an additional resource advantage because they educate a much smaller proportion of socially disadvantaged students than do public schools. This means that a lower proportion of private school income is absorbed by disadvantaged students and more is available for less disadvantaged students. Total income per student in South Australian independent schools is 25% higher than for public schools. Yet, research by Save Our Schools shows that only 15% of independent school students in South Australia are from low-income families, compared to 34% of public school students. These are 2023 figures. Independent schools enrol only 11% of all low-income students in South Australia, while public schools account for 77% of these students. Moreover, only 5% of independent schools in South Australia are disadvantaged schools, defined as having over 50% of students from the lowest socio-educationally advantaged quartile, compared to 28% of public schools. Independent schools account for only 3% of all disadvantaged schools in South Australia, while public schools account for 92%. Total income per student in Catholic schools was 12% higher than in public schools in 2024. However, only 19% of Catholic school students were from low-income families, compared to 34% in public schools in 2023. Catholic schools enrol only 13% of all disadvantaged students in South Australia, compared to 77% of these students by public schools. In addition, only 7% of Catholic schools are disadvantaged, over 50% of the students from the lowest socio-educationally advantaged quartile, compared to 28% of public schools. Catholic schools account for only 5% of all South Australian disadvantaged schools, compared to 92% by public schools. The Report on Government Services 2026 shows that 77% of students from low socio-educational families in South Australia, 84% of Indigenous students, and 78% of remote and very remote area students are enrolled in public schools. Clearly, government funding in South Australia is not being directed at the students and schools most in need. It is disgraceful that governments continue to give independent schools a huge resource advantage over public schools when it is public schools that do the heavy lifting in overcoming socio-economic disadvantage to improve equity in education, increase workforce skills, and strengthen social cohesion. Historical trends. The pattern of government funding, fees and other income and total income per student have varied between school sectors over the period of 2009 to 2024. Government funding. There was no change in real government, Commonwealth and South Australian government funding for public schools between 2009 and 2019. From 2019 to 2024, it increased by $2,093 per student. Commonwealth government funding for public schools fell between 2009 and 2012 from $1,747 to $1,578 per student. It then steadily increased to $2,976 in 2023, but fell to $2,895 in 2024. South Australian government funding fell from $9,256 per student in 2009 to $8,758 in 2019, a decline of $498 per student. It increased by $1,571 per student between 2019 and 2024. In contrast, government funding for private schools increased steadily over the whole period of 2009 to 2024. Government funding for Catholic schools increased from $7,481 per student in 2009 to $11,746 in 2024. During COVID, government funding of Catholic schools was only a little below that of public schools, $11,951 per student compared to $12,037. The increase in funding since 2009 was almost entirely due to increased Commonwealth government funding, which increased from $5,810 per student to $9,239. In contrast to other states, individual South Australian Catholic schools received a large increase in Commonwealth government funding in the COVID year of 2020, when funding increased by $2,235 per student. South Australian government funding for Catholic schools increased by $836 per student from 2009 to 2024, with much of the increase occurring between 2017 and 2024. Government funding for independent schools increased from $6,217 per student in 2009 to $9,990 in 2024. Commonwealth government funding increased from $4,817 per student in 2009 to $7,869, and South Australian government funding increased from $1,400 per student to $2,121. Independent schools also received a significant increase in Commonwealth funding during COVID of $741 per student, which was much less than for Catholic schools. The increase for Catholic schools was three times that for independent schools. Commonwealth financial assistance for 92 South Australian private schools during COVID in 2020 under the JobKeeper scheme amounted to $118 million, an average of about $1.3 million per school. Government funding for Catholic schools as a proportion of funding for public schools increased from 68% in 2009 to 99% in 2020 and reduced to 89% in 2024. The independent school proportion increased from 57% to 78% in 2020 and has fallen to 76% in 2024. Fees, charges and other income. Adjusting for wage and price increases, income from fees, charges, donations, investments and other sources increased by $525 per student in independent schools between 2009 and 2024. Income from these sources fell by $156 per student in Catholic schools and fell by $185 per student in public schools. Over the period, there was a large fluctuation in income from fees and other private sources in independent schools and a lesser one in Catholic schools. Income from these sources increased by more than wage and price increases in independent schools between 2009 and 2017 and then declined to 2020 with little change since. Total income. The combination of increased government funding and income from fees and other private sources has enabled private schools to build a substantial resource advantage over public schools since 2009. In 2009, total income per student adjusted for inflation in Catholic schools was $386 less than in public schools. By 2011, Catholic schools had a slight income advantage over public schools, which increased to $1,686 per student in 2024. Increased government funding and private income has magnified the resource advantage of independent schools since 2009. In 2009, the total income per student in independent schools was $1,082 higher than in public schools. By 2024, this had increased to $3,343. Total income per student was 124% of that of public schools. The resource advantage of independent schools has declined slightly in recent years because of increased government funding for public schools. Underfunding of public schools. Public schools remain vastly underfunded for the task they face in educating the large majority of low socioeconomic status, SES, Indigenous, remote, very remote, and high disability students. As noted above, public schools do the heavy lifting in education, but are not funded to do the job. In 2026, public schools in South Australia are funded at 90.5% of their schooling resource standard, the SRS, the third lowest in the country behind the Northern Territory and Victoria. The total underfunding for the year is estimated at $380 million. Under the terms of the new bilateral funding agreements, public schools will remain underfunded until at least 2034, although the extent of the underfunding will gradually decline to about $120 million in 2034. By contrast, Catholic and independent schools in South Australia are overfunded at 101% of their SRS, as revealed in figures supplied to Senate estimates and in the bilateral funding agreement. Public schools will remain underfunded until at least 2034 because the new bilateral funding agreement between the Commonwealth and South Australian governments allow the South Australian government to continue to claim expenditures that are specifically excluded from how the SRS is calculated as part of its share of funding public schools. It can claim capital depreciation of up to 4% of the SRS as part of its share of funding public schools, but the percentage share allowed will be reduced annually by small amounts until it is eliminated in 2034. The South Australian Government is also allowed to claim other non-SRS expenditure as part of its share of funding public schools. It can continue to claim expenditure on the South Australian Certificate of Education Board and the Education Standards Board as part of its share of funding public schools. It can also claim up to 1.8% of its share of funding public schools for what the agreement acknowledges are non-standard inclusions in the SRS. This claim includes expenditure on school transport for public school students, up to 1.07% of its SRS share for public schools, and up to 0.73% on expenditure on the mid-year intake in public schools. These concessions ensure that public schools will still be underfunded in 2034, even though the 4% allowance will end in 2034. The Commonwealth and South Australian government stand condemned for their refusal to fully fund public schools by 2034. It means that children starting school this year will not be fully funded by year eight and possibly will spend their whole school career underfunded if they remain in the public system. The failure to fully fund public schools maintains inequity in education, increases social segregation, and restricts national prosperity and social cohesion. The Commonwealth and South Australian governments should accelerate the transition to genuine full funding of all public schools. The funding agreements must be revised to give public schools better and fairer funding. The Commonwealth should accelerate the increase in its funding share of the SRS public schools to achieve 25% by 2029, and the South Australian government should remove the existing 4% and other expenditure allowances by 2034. Back to you, Jane.
Well, thank you very much, Andy. And you might notice that Trevor Cobbold's figures prove that things have got much, much worse for public schools and much, much better for private schools since 2009. And 2010, of course, was when we had the Gonski report. And Gonski went back in many ways to the Carmel report of 1975. The Labor Party trying to keep the Catholic vote and the evangelical and the religious vote happy start talking about needs. But it doesn't take very long for these religious people to turn the needs into greeds. They're very, very good at getting money, aren't they? And building up their property resources at taxpayers' expense. It's a great pity that the public schools can't do the same. But let's see what the private schools have been doing. They have been enjoying a rise in enrolments. They're taking a lot of middle-class families away from the public school sector, unfortunately. And there's a very interesting article that we found in The Educator about this. We don't necessarily agree with the general thrust of this, but I think the facts and figures are there and they are very interesting indeed.
Thanks, Jean. This is an article from The Educator Online by Joanna Hines. Private school enrolments rise as families cut essentials to pay fees. According to a survey of 1,508 parents conducted by Independent Schools Australia, 75% had adjusted their household budget in the past year to remain in their chosen school. 28% cut spending on essentials such as medicine, groceries, and transport. One in five received financial assistance from extended family members. These are taking place amid projections that private school fees will continue to rise faster than inflation. The cost of going private. The national average cost of private schooling is around $8,973 per student per year. That figure includes additional fees and levies, according to data cited in an analysis by The Conversation, published on the 3rd of August 2026. A full K-12 education at an independent school can exceed $100,000 per student. State level figures from 2024 show the variation. New South Wales, average Year 12 tuition at an independent school was $15,674. In Victoria, $20,923 for the same year level. Australian private school fees rank among the highest worldwide. Unlike most comparable nations, there is no regulatory cap on what non-government schools can charge. Enrolments are shifting away from the public sector. Independent school enrolments have reached a two-decade high. The share of Australian students attending independent schools rose from 13% in 2006 to 17% in 2025. Over the same period, the share at public schools fell from 67% to 63%. Catholic school enrolments held steady at around 20%. The funding picture helps explain the trend. Most public schools outside the ACT receive less than their entitlement under the Schooling Resource Standard, the SRS, the federal benchmark for minimum per student funding. Recent reporting shows private schools are pulling further ahead as the funding gap widens. Public schools are not expected to reach full SRS funding until at least 2034, according to analysis by Save Our Schools. What families say they would do differently. A separate Australia Institute poll surveyed 2,230 Australian adults. It asked parents with children in private schools whether better public school funding would change their choice. 38% said they would have enrolled their child in the public system. 41% said they would remain in the private sector regardless. And 21% were undecided. The results suggest that for a significant share of private school families, the decision is not fixed. Better resourced public schools could shift the balance. The case for reform on private school fees. A two-year study interviewed 58 public school principals across every Australian state and territory. It found that parents are choosing schools based on infrastructure, facilities, and extracurricular programs. These are harder to match in the public sector. That study was led by Dr. Eliza Di Gregorio, lecturer at Adelaide University in South Australia, and Emma Rowe, associate professor in education at Deakin University in Victoria. They argue that without structural reform, the current system places disproportionate pressure on middle-income families. It also entrenches a two-tier system. In their analysis for the conversation, Di Gregorio and Rowe pointed to international models where fees are tied to public funding. In Canada, the United Kingdom, Sweden, and Belgium, tuition fees are either prohibited or regulated for schools that receive government funding. Linking fee levels to funding entitlements, they suggest, could reduce costs and broaden access. Fee-charging schools, regardless of fee level, are consistently linked to higher levels of school segregation. Advantaged students become concentrated in separate parts of the system. Australia already ranks among the most segregated school systems in the developed world. Debate about how Australia could build a more equal school system has gained renewed urgency as the enrolment divide continues to widen. Whether any government will move to regulate independent school fees remains unclear. For now, the data shows many families are absorbing the cost at considerable personal sacrifice. Back to you, Jean.
Well, thank you so much for that. And let's have a quick break after all those facts and figures, shall we?
Help 3CR raise funds by donating your containers. Every eligible drink container that you return to a Container Deposit Scheme recycling point earns 10 cents, which can really add up. 3CR is a donation partner for Victoria's Container Deposit Scheme. The scheme allows you to recycle selected aluminium, glass, or plastic containers and donate the funds earned to a not-for-profit organisation of your choice. Help us raise funds for the station. Search for Community Radio and choose 3CR next time you cash in your cans. Go to cdsvic.org.au for more information.
Listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 AM. Visit the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au/podcast to hear the most recent recording from each show, or 3cr.org.au/streaming to listen live.
Well, we hope you're still listening to the Dogs program. We've just had our facts and figures session. Now we'll have our scuttlebutt session. Dale's going to tell us how Catholic Schools New South Wales have finally, it's taken them a long time, sacked their chief executive because he's been the star of a corruption inquiry. Surprise, surprise. Over to you, Dale.
Thanks, Jean. This article's from The Educator by Jack Campbell. Catholic School New South Wales sacks chief executive amid corruption inquiry. Catholic Schools New South Wales, CSNSW, the peak body overseeing almost 600 Catholic schools across the state, has sacked Chief Executive Dallas McInerney days after he gave evidence at the New South Wales Independent Commission Against Corruption, ICAC. In a statement issued on the 21st of August, the CSNSW board said it had unanimously determined it had lost confidence in Mr. McInerney's ability to lead the organisation and had terminated his employment agreement effective immediately. What the ICAC inquiring is examining. The ICAC inquiry is examining allegations that Mr. McInerney arranged and approved political donations channeled through CSNSW to lobbying companies linked to a religious right faction of the New South Wales Liberal Party known as the Reformers, that were not properly declared and may have exceeded caps set under New South Wales electoral funding law. The practice, commonly known as branch stacking, is not itself illegal, but the alleged non-disclosure and cap breaches are the focus of the Commission's concern. Mr. McInerney, appointed as CSNSW's inaugural chief executive in 2017, had already stood aside from the role earlier this year after being named in the inquiry. Over 3 days of evidence, he maintained that payments totalling roughly $265,900 over 4 years were for genuine consulting work. He also told the Commission he had performed a factory reset on his work phone and iPad, a move counsel assisting the inquiry, Peggy Dwyer, SC, characterised as a deliberate attempt to remove evidence, a characterisation Mr. McInerney disputed, saying he had not been trying to conceal anything relevant to the probe. Board cites deep concern despite no findings against the organisation. The board was careful to distinguish between the organisation and its former chief executive. It noted that counsel assisting had told the inquiry there was no suggestion CSNSW itself was responsible for the conduct being examined, nor that board members or executives were aware of Mr. McInerney's alleged actions. Even so, the board said the matters raised were of deep concern to CSNSW and its stakeholders and confirmed it would support an externally conducted review of the organisation's operations. Interim Chief Executive Peter Yates will continue in the role while a permanent replacement is sought. In a statement provided to media on Friday, Mr. McInerney said he had prioritised the position of the organisation over his own and had therefore stood aside when the inquiry began, adding that he remained grateful for the opportunity to have served CSNSW. Why it matters for education leaders. For a governance sector already under scrutiny over funding transparency, the sacking underscores how quickly a leadership crisis can escalate once a corruption inquiry names a sitting executive. A dynamic education boards and school governing bodies more broadly should watch closely, particularly around the conflicts of interest and political engagement by senior staff. New South Wales electoral law sets clear disclosure obligations and donation caps for any organisation making political contributions, obligations that extend to peak bodies such as CSNSW, regardless of their non-profit status. The ICAC inquiry continues with further witnesses scheduled to give evidence in the coming weeks. Back to you, Jean.
Well, thank you, Dale. And now a bit more scuttlebutt away from the corruption inquiry, actually into the courts, where there's a criminal case involving three junior students at the Sydney Scots College, which has escalated into a governance crisis. Poor Scots College. To you, Dale, again.
Thanks, Jean. This article's by Jack Campbell from The Educator. Scots College crisis puts school leadership and culture under fire. a criminal case involving three junior students at Sydney's The Scots College has escalated into a governance crisis for the elite Bellevue Hill School after the resignation of a high-profile old boy and a parent petition demanding an extraordinary meeting with Principal Dr. Ian Lambert. The case centres on the alleged sexual assault of a 14-year-old girl in a Bondi Junction laneway on the 22nd of July 2026, involving three Scots College students aged 13 and 14. Police charged the boys last week following searches of their homes, and the matter remains before the courts and unproven, according to reporting by the Sydney Morning Herald, which confirmed the Scots College Council had backed Lambert while revealing staff had briefed students as young as 10 on the allegations. Old boy's resignation adds to the pressure. The story widened on the 17th of August when a Scots old boy's messages in a 100-member alumni WhatsApp group, which downplayed the allegations and described the alleged victim in derogatory terms, were reported publicly. Arthur Zanaros, then Managing Director and Chief Executive of Sydney logistics company ACFS Port Logistics, resigned from both roles within an hour of the messages being published, according to the Sydney Morning Herald, which reported the messages called the alleged victim a willing participant and labelled the accused students in derogatory terms. In a statement, Zanaros said he deeply regretted the comments and hoped stepping aside would remove the episode from the company's operations, The Australian reported. School leadership under scrutiny. For Dr. Ian Lambert, principal of the Scots College in Bellevue Hill, New South Wales, the fallout has intensified pressure that predates the current case. Lambert had already announced his departure from the college at the end of 2027. Some parents are now calling for his immediate resignation, and a parent chat group has circulated a petition calling for an extraordinary council meeting, better communication from the school, and for the three accused students to be barred from returning while the case is before the courts, according to reporting in the Daily Telegraph. One parent, whose son is in the same year group as the accused students, told the Telegraph the school's response was not good enough. The Scots College Council, chaired by the Reverend Glenn Pather, has publicly backed Lambert's leadership, stating in a letter to parents that council fully supports his leadership and shares responsibility for decisions arising from the matter. The school also defended its existing curriculum, saying it has delivered age-appropriate consent and sexuality education from kindergarten to senior school for at least 15 years, and that all students in year 5 and above had been briefed on the matter in age-appropriate settings. A test case for governance and curriculum. For school leaders and boards more broadly, the case is emerging as a test of how independent schools balance legal caution, community communication, and consent education when a criminal matter touches their own student body. It also lands amid a broader national conversation about the Standard of Respectful Relationships Education, RRE, in Australian schools. The Commonwealth's Consent and Respectful Relationships Education Initiative, running from 2024 to 2028, has committed $77.6 million to help government and non-government schools deliver evidence-based, age-appropriate consent programs, according to the Australian Government Department of Education. How principals and boards communicate and how consent curriculum is framed during this kind of crisis is a live question for the sector. Sector advocates have also long argued for why evidence-led consent education matters for young people's safety, a point now under fresh scrutiny as the Scots community awaits the council's response to the parent petition. Back to you, Jean.
Oh, well, that's enough, Scott. Let's go overseas, shall we? Over to Jeff.
Good afternoon, listeners. Today we're going to start out with a charity you may never have heard of. It used to be called Child Fund Korea, but now it has the name Chograzan for Children.
Chorog is the Korean word for green, and Yusan is the word for umbrella, and it represents protection and dreams. Guided by this philosophy, they try to support individual children and improve systems and environments that shape their lives. It's supported by more than 580,000 donors in Korea. And this is an article which is from the Khmer Times in Cambodia. Chograsan for Children, it begins, convenes workshop to strengthen Cambodia's education system. Chograsan for Children, CUFC, held a project achievement sharing workshop on August 24th, bringing together more than 60 education stakeholders to discuss ways to strengthen Cambodia's education system and support the country's education strategic plan through 2030. The workshop brought together senior officials from the Ministry of Education, Youth and Sport, MOEYS, development partners, education experts and youth representatives to share evidence and lessons from education projects and to explore how successful initiatives could contribute to national priorities. CUFC Country Director Jaekun Roh said strong partnerships were essential to supporting children throughout their educational journey. Transforming this vision into reality requires unwavering partnership to support students through their entire education journey, starting from early childhood and foundational learning, Roh said. Delivering the keynote address, Ung China, Director General of the General Department of Education at MOEYS, highlighted the importance of multi-sectoral cooperation in advancing Cambodia's education goals. He said Cambodia had made significant progress in expanding access to education and in improving learning quality, while the ministry continued to prioritise equity, learning outcomes, foundational literacy and digital transformation. China urged stakeholders to assess education projects beyond immediate outputs by considering evidence, lessons learned, sustainability and their contribution to the broader education system. The workshop featured a panel discussion involving officials and education experts on how successful local initiatives could be integrated into national education policy and scaled up. Om Chandra, Deputy Director of the Department of Digital Transformation, discussed the conditions needed at school and policy levels to expand successful digital education programs. He highlighted the Improved Digital Education for All Learners project, implemented by Kampuchea Action to promote education in 12 schools and reaching about 9,000 children. Professor Park Hwan-bo of South Korea's Chungnam National University highlighted evidence-based approaches to ensuring the sustainability of education programs. He drew on the Improved Digital Competency in Education project, implemented by Child Fund Cambodia and supported by CUFC from 2023 to 2025 in 17 schools, benefiting about 32,000 children. The workshop also examined the transition from early childhood development to primary education. Prak Kosal, Deputy Director General of the National Committee for Early Childhood Care and Development and Director of the Early Childhood Education Department, and Chun Rami, Deputy Director of the Department of Primary Education, discussed how stronger coordination between two stages could improve school readiness and foundational learning. The discussion highlighted CUFC's Bung Trabek Child Development Project, which has established one child development centre benefiting 320 children, and the COICA-funded Easy to Learn Phase 3 project, implemented in 17 schools and benefiting about 6,020 children. The workshop also introduced the Chorongusan Global Partnership for Education Centre. Deputy Director Kunga Christy Bang discussed how international education frameworks could complement Cambodia's priorities. The CUFC said the workshop reaffirmed the shared commitment of the government, NGOs and development partners to strengthen the education system and ensure children have equitable access to quality education as Cambodia works towards its 2030 education goals. Anyway, that's the end of the article. I just thought I'd mention it because it's an example of a good quango who's having a good crack at soft power expansion from Korea's point of view and certainly doing good works in countries where education is not the highest priority of the government or the government hasn't got the means to implement the largest and greatest of all the education systems. Wouldn't it be nice if Australia was doing more in Southeast Asia to strengthen education? Anyway, with that, I'm going to go to the United States, where the opposite is true, where the government is actively working against public education, and they're prepared to use statistics that are completely bent out of all proportion to make their arguments look better. This argument comes from this article comes from the Network for Public Education, and it's by Daniel H. Robinson and Howard Wehner. And it says, "The Mississippi Miracle, Smoke and Mirrors versus Reality." Writing for Skeptic, Daniel H. Robinson and Howard Wehner cast a doubtful eye on the Mississippi reading miracle. They open with a reminder that we've seen education miracles, in inverted commas, before. Over a quarter of a century ago, it begins, the Texas miracle was mentioned by President candidate George W. Bush as a model for educational reform. What was this Texas miracle? It wasn't a miracle in the same sense as an apparition of the Virgin Mary, last witnessed in 1531 in Mexico. Rather, it was observed that the Houston Independent School District had apparently experienced significant gains in student achievement, simply by holding school administrators accountable for their students' test performance. The Houston superintendent, Rod Page, was later appointed by President Bush to be Secretary of Education. Sadly, the miracle turned out to be a hoax. Administrators weren't able to improve test scores by increasing the number of students who were categorised into special education, so their scores would not be included in the overall average. Such a strategy to increase average scores by omitting the lowest scores is called left truncation of the score distribution. Note how the same strategy would boost life expectancy by only polling the living. 10 years later, the El Paso miracle involved a similar strategy. Superintendent Lorenzo Garcia had ninth grade low scorers transferred, dismissed, retained, or allowed to skip ahead to their junior year to help them from taking the state-mandated 10th grade achievement test. To raise graduation rates, students received full course credit for taking a two-hour weekend class. Garcia spoke about his desire to become the state education commissioner. Then he was arrested. We note that in the biblical past, those chosen to bestow miracles were very special people and were often canonized for their efforts. For example, Acts 19:11 tells us that God's miracles came through the hands of Paul. We know of no one who has compared Rod Page or Lorenzo Garcia to St. Paul. The idea of being able to summon a miracle to solve the age-old problem of poor and minority students scoring low on achievement tests has near universal appeal. Such miracles are, in Samuel Johnson's delicious observation, the triumph of hope over experience. The same observation helps to explain the gush of enthusiasm in the public media immediately following reports of educational miracles. Over a century of experience in educational reform has taught us that unbelievable improvements in average student performance either A, did not happen, or B, were due to a strategy of limiting who was included in the assessment. Yet because such smoke and mirrors miracles tend to be easier and cheaper than boosting student performance through smaller classes, better instruction, etc., we have little hope that using evidence to debunk such claims will eradicate the audience for a good miracle. The best we can hope for is visible increases in scepticism and a demand for associated empirical evidence to support the claimed miracle. Experience has taught us that the smaller the reported effect of an intervention on the grand enterprise of education, the more likely it is to be true. The latest education miracle is the Mississippi miracle, a miraculous turnaround of a state that only recently consistently ranked near the bottom of all states in education. Mississippi now leads the country as the fastest improving school system. The most recent 2024 National Assessment of Educational Progress, NAEP, results reported that Mississippi now ranks in a tie for seventh amongst all the states in fourth grade reading, whereas in 2015 only three states scored lower than Mississippi. The rankings, when statistically adjusted, are even more impressive. And there's a link there to the full article, which is quite extensive, and I would encourage you to have a read of it. It's in the Skeptic. It does go on. Indeed, how can a state that has been long plagued by being either in the first place in undesirable rankings, poverty, obesity, infant mortality rates, corporal punishment, or last in desirable ones, education test scores, median household income, teacher salaries, now be lauded as a role model for other states to follow in their education of their children? When adjusting for poverty, Mississippi has moved to the top of all states, not only in fourth grade reading, but also maths. Even kids who are not economically disadvantaged have improved. But success is not limited to the wealthy or the white. The question is, who hasn't improved? Hispanic students in Mississippi now outperform Hispanic students in all other states. Black students in Mississippi rank third amongst black students in all states. And even more surprising, the improvements in NAEP scores have occurred for students at every percentile, ranging from the lowest performers to the very highest. This is unusual, as educational interventions typically improve performance for either the low performers, but not so much for high performers, or for the high performers, but not the lowest. In fact, Mississippi was the only state to improve fourth grade NAEP reading scores for the bottom 10% of students from 2013 to 2024. There are no typical aptitude by treatment interactions here, where one group of learners improves more than others. This is simply amazing, considering the intervention was designed to benefit struggling readers. And again, such large universal effects raise red flags, as smaller ones are the norm in education. Anyway, I'll leave it there. It's a long article. It's actually in The Skeptic, and it was linked there by the Network for Public Education, and it's an interesting read. With that, I'm going to pass you back to the headquarters and wish you a lovely weekend, and let's hope that your miracles aren't smoke and mirrors. Cheerio.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff, and now it's time for a quick break. But stay tuned to 3CR because the good news section of our program comes after this.
3CR programs provide information and analysis you won't hear in the mainstream.
Today we'll be looking at the legacy of the US war on Vietnam on Laos.
And as far as corporate capitalism is concerned, it is the worst political and economic system that you can have.
Our laws about jailing refugees and asylum seekers are so well crafted.
Sex is not irrelevant and we like who we are, but we don't have to be imprisoned by our gender.
Become a subscriber today. Call us on 9419 8377 or visit 3cr.org.au. 3CR, the voice of dissent.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
Well, we hope you're still listening to the Dogs program because we're going to take you up to New South Wales, where vocational enrolments in the public schools have skyrocketed. And we're wondering whether or not the same sort of thing is happening down here in Victoria as well.
Thanks, Jane. New South Wales public schools reach record vocational training enrolments. New South Wales public schools have recorded their strongest vocational education and training, VET, enrolment growth on record, according to figures released ahead of National Skills Week, which began on the 24th of August 2026 under the theme Life Changing. Commencements in VET in schools programs at New South Wales public schools rose 36.5% from 29,005 in 2024 to 39,605 in 2025, according to data from the National Centre for Vocational Education Research's VET in Schools 2025 report. Across all three New South Wales school sectors combined, commencements increased 30.8%, or 13,850 students, to reach 58,785 in 2025. The growth has pushed total VET in school enrolments at New South Wales public schools to a record 44,550 for the year. A head start on career pathways. Murat Dizdar, Secretary of the New South Wales Department of Education, said VET in schools gave students practical industry-connected skills well before they left the classroom. VET is about giving young people a head start, building the practical skills, confidence and experience they need to move from the classroom into further training, further study and rewarding careers, Dizdar said. Students can enrol in VET courses from as early as Year 9, choosing from subjects spanning construction to entertainment services, with courses counting towards both the HSC and a nationally recognised VET qualification. The trend mirrors a similar surge in vocational pathway participation across the independent schooling sector and follows national data showing more school leavers weighing up VET against university as a post-school option. Government investment behind the growth. New South Wales Skills, TAFE and Tertiary Education Minister Steve Wan said the record enrolments reflect the value of practical job-ready skills. National Skills Week is about celebrating the skills that work. These are the skills that lead to jobs, support industry and create opportunities for people right across New South Wales, Wan said. The rise has been underpinned by the state government's expansion of the Educational Pathways Program, additional support for the Regional Industry Education Partnerships Program, and growth in school-based apprenticeships and traineeships, SBATs, which let students earn a VET qualification and their HSE while in paid employment. The initiatives sit within the New South Wales Skills Plan 2024 to 2028, which sets out the state's strategy for strengthening VET pathways for secondary students. It also builds on broader efforts across the sector to smooth the transition from school into work. Back to you, Jean.
Well, many thanks, Sandy. That's very interesting about vocational parts of the curriculum. So let's go to one of our very, very best Victorian schools and see what they're doing about vocational education. Back to Andy.
Thanks, Jean. And this week's Great State School of the Week is Northcote High School. The principals are welcome. We challenge minds and equip our young people with the skills and dispositions, knowledge and confidence necessary to contribute as active, engaged citizens of their local and global context to follow the better path. Welcome to Northcote High School. Since opening in 1926, our school has been proud to serve the local community. And as we approach our centenary in 2026, we remain committed to providing an education that honours our history while embracing innovation and future-focused learning. Our motto, Meliora Sequimur, to follow the better path, inspires our students to live our core values of achievement, curiosity, humanity, and fairness. These principles guide a learning culture that develops critical thinking, curiosity, and collaboration, preparing our young people to thrive in a rapidly changing world. We support students to begin their Northcote journey with a comprehensive transition program that helps them settle in, build connections, and navigate school life with confidence. Our expert staff are dedicated to student growth, combining deep curriculum knowledge with high expectations to support strong learning outcomes. Our students' VCE results reflect this ongoing commitment to academic excellence and future pathways. We are proud of our diverse and inclusive community, where every student is valued and supported to succeed. Alongside academic learning, students participate in a rich extracurricular program, including sport, clubs, and events. Our renowned music program offers a wide range of instruments, bands, and ensembles, including a concert band. Northcote High School also has a long history of producing graduates who contribute meaningfully across fields such as academia, politics, the arts, and sport. Their continued engagement with the school reflects our strong sense of community and aspiration. What is VET? Vocational Education and Training, VET, is an accredited vocational education and training program that secondary students usually complete as one subject over 2 years. VET focuses on students developing industry-specific and workplace skills, and courses are designed to meet industry needs. VET subjects allow students to gain practical skills in a specific industry by completing a nationally recognised vocational qualification. A VET certificate can contribute towards the completion of a student's senior secondary certificate, such as a Victorian Certificate of Education, VCE, or the VCE Vocational Major, VCEVM. Students at Northcote High School can apply to complete a VET subject as part of their wider program in years 10, 11 and 12. Certificates take 2 years to complete, and therefore students should start their VET course in either year 10 or year 11. Where do students study their VET subject? Northcote High School is a member of both the Northern Melbourne VET Cluster, NMVC, and the Inner Melbourne VET Cluster, IMVC. These clusters are consortia of secondary schools formed to improve the provision of VET programs in the northern and inner region of Melbourne. Having access to these two clusters opens up a wide range of vocational subject offerings and locations for NHS students. Students work with our VET coordinator to choose a provider and course which fits their timetable. Students travel to study their vocational certificate on Wednesday or Thursday afternoon. VET subjects. Students are provided with information regarding VET offerings during the course expo and selection process. VET programs offer a diverse range of study areas, including agriculture, fashion design and textiles, building and construction, business, community services, allied health, makeup, horticulture, hospitality, media, animal studies, visual arts, sport and recreation, digital media and technology, equine studies, furniture making, music industry, engineering and dance. Structured workplace learning. Structured Workplace Learning, SWL, is on-the-job training that allows VET students to develop their work skills and understand employer expectations. SWL is often a compulsory aspect of undertaking a VET course. This might involve students undertaking work placement on school holidays or sometimes during term time. Students study for vocational major might also have an opportunity to undertake a school-based apprenticeship or traineeship, SBAT. For more information on doing an SBAT, students can chat with our careers practitioner. And now some facts and figures from the My School website. The enrolment, 1,668, and the ICSEA value above average at 1,153. This means that 62% of students come from the upper 25% of socio-educational advantage families. The second quartile, 24% of students. The third quartile, below 50%, makes up 11% of students, and the bottom quartile of socio-educational advantage makes up 4% of students. 25% have a language background other than English, and there's 0% Indigenous students. The finances, recurrent grants from the Australian Government of $5.65 million, and from the Victorian Government of $21.27 million. Fees and parent contributions add another $4.69 million and other private contributions, $828,625. And this comes to $18,677 per student. The capital, $25.66 million over 3 years. Back to you, Jane.
Well, congratulations to the Northcote High School, our great state school of the week. But our time is gone. So it's up to me now to thank our wonderful producer, Dale, and her offsider, Andy, and also to Jeff, who's taken us overseas. And we hope that Sorrel's having a lovely time over there in the UK. If you'd like to find out more about the dogs, you can do so at our website at www.adogs.info. But from all of us here at 3CR and the dogs, it's bye for now.
I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake City, Joe says I, him standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I'm dead. Says Joe, but I'm dead. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die, says Joe, I didn't die. And standing there as big as life and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize, went on to organize. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, it's there you'll find your hill. It's there you'll find your hill. I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 AM on digital and online. 3CR Radical Radio.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
3CR. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.